This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. For most of us, sitting down to enjoy a meal is a pretty standard event each day. Food is not only a source of energy for us, it's also a source of healthy pleasure. But there are those who view food from a very unique perspective. Eating has become something far different, and the result of that shift in perspective can be deadly. Our guest today is director of the Balance Eating Disorder Treatment Center, located in New York City, and she's here to share with us some information and guidance on this topic. Melanie Rogers, welcome to HeartWise.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be joining you today.
Now, when does it begin, Melanie? When does someone start viewing food as something that feeds their psyche instead of their physical body?
It's a very good question, and we have some information or research that suggests that it starts when we're kids. Because if you think about emotional eating and you think about how we soothe ourselves, and if you think about food being one of the first substances, if you will, that we learn will soothe us and make us feel better. So even as young kids, we can start to distort the relationship with food, very unknowingly, of course, but using it for something other than just nourishment.
So what do we use it for? Give us some examples of what a young person would find lacking in their life that food seems to fill in.
You know, you come home from school, maybe there's been a fight at school, or you're upset about a grade, or, you know, you've fallen out with one of your good friends, you're feeling pretty down. So cookie jar looks pretty good, and you can find yourself overeating out of comfort, what we would call comfort eating, even as a youngster. So, and often that comfort eating is also reflected in the family unit. So all of us, I think, to some degree might find ourselves comfort eating to a certain degree, and that there's a normalcy in that. But this is what we find over time. This can be taken to a whole other level, and then kids can end up with what we call actually binge eating or compulsive overeating.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Melanie, but I've never heard someone say that I came home from work and boy, I needed comfort and I just overate those apples and those oranges. We don't seem to have people overeating of the good stuff, overeating of the bad stuff. So is it not the fact that we're overeating? Is it that we're overeating the wrong stuff?
There's certainly a point to that, but there's a little bit more to it, actually, and that is it's about what the food breaks down to chemically in the body and therefore what it's providing to the body. And it's of no surprise that most of us will reach for something that's more sugary or what we call carbohydrates.
Yes.
So cookies, cakes, these sorts of foods. For some people, it's bread, it's pasta even as a comfort food. And the reason that we reach for these foods is because when you take in a higher amount of carbohydrates or sugar in this case, the body actually produces a chemical that makes you feel better and less anxious. That chemical is called serotonin. So the brain will actually release serotonin, more serotonin, as you're eating those types of foods, and it makes you feel less anxious. So that's why we're going for the cake or the cookies instead of the apples and the bananas. It's actually how the brain is wired.
Okay, very good. Can that brain be retrained? Can an apple and an orange ever become a comfort food for someone?
It's a really good question. I would suggest it would be very difficult, actually. I mean, yes. I'm sure that there are people who have a great association with fruits and vegetables and such, but again, if we think about that chemistry, fruits and vegetables just don't break down in the same way as typical carbohydrates do, cookies and cakes and such. So that piece, I think, is a little bit hardwired, and I like to emphasize that, though. I think it's important that people know that, because when they reach for the cookie and the cakes, there's often a lot of self-blame and self-shame, because I should be reaching for the apple. I know that's healthier for me. We know that cognitively. But because of this underlying chemical reaction that's going on, it's really a function of the physiology, and I like people to know that so that they're not self-flagellating or beating themselves up as to why can't I just reach for the apple instead of the cake or the cookies.
Well, that makes sense because, you know, it'd be like an alcoholic reaching for some orange juice. That's not going to do what the alcohol used to do for him or her.
Exactly. That's a very, very good analogy, yes.
All right, very good. Let's now stay with this comfort food just a little bit longer here before we move into the other eating disorders. When that person comes home from school, that young person comes home from school and they had a fight, or if it's, you know, if your spouse dumped on you, or if you're having a hard day and you need comfort, where do you go? We know that the comfort food has elements in it that will actually bring about a chemical reaction that seems like it's comforting you, but it's also destroying your health. What can we do instead?
Well, that's what we try to help our clients do. And so the first step there, the very first step, is actually acknowledging that you're having these emotions. Mm-hmm. So usually what happens is we come home, we're tired, we're, you know, irritable, we're feeling very down, and we just automatically reach for the food to soothe us. There's not a moment necessarily where we pause and do a check-in. Mm. And we say, okay, what is actually going on here? Am I truly hungry, or is there something else going on? And that moment of reflection, self-reflection, pausing, if you will, to then check in with yourself emotionally can then help you to say, oh, okay, I'm upset about this. Am I really hungry for the food? Actually, I'm not. Can I do something else? Possibly. And so that's what we call, you know, a very good intersection in the road, if you will, where you have the option, you have the opportunity at that moment with that insight to then choose to do something else. So that might be call up a friend. That might be go and take a run. That might be take a bath, something else that's soothing that is not food.
Is there any indication a person can see in the mirror, or if they look inwardly, that tells them, you know, hey, we have a problem here. I have a problem here. I am kind of a comfort food junkie here. What would be an indication that says that that is true?
I think the main indication there is really how you feel about your relationship with food. So for the person observing you and your behaviors, it may look fairly normal. And often with our comfort eaters, they tend to hide a lot of their behaviors. So it's really about them checking in and asking the question, do I feel neutral about my relationship with food, or is there some secrecy or shame around my eating behaviors? That would be a very good first question to ask.
I'm seeing a lot of parallels here between food and alcoholism, because that seems to be an issue here with alcohol. Alcohol, from the outward appearance, they seem to be okay, but they have to look inwardly to find the answers. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Now, let's move on now to some other disorders that you deal with at the Balance Eating Disorder Treatment Center there in New York City. Before we get into them individually, have you seen an uptick in the amount of people suffering from a food addiction or a food malady during the last 10, 15 years?
Definitely.
Really?
Definitely.
Really?
And we're not sure. We've definitely seen an uptick. In fact, if you look at the national health reports, we've seen over the last three decades a significant increase in obesity. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting that that necessarily means an uptick in compulsive overeating, but about 75% of our compulsive overeaters and binge eating disorder clients also struggle with overweight or obesity. So there's definitely a correlation there.
Okay. All right. Now, let's break this down into some of these areas that you deal with there. We have anorexia, bulimia, binge eating, and other disturbances. What's the number one thing? What do you find that most people that walk through your door are suffering from?
Most people who walk through my door are struggling with anorexia.
And let's get a working definition of that. And how do you treat that?
Anorexia is where there is a deliberate attempt to restrict calories, and there's a consequential weight loss that gets to a place where it actually challenges the very existence of the body. In other words, someone can get really sick, and anorexia, unfortunately, has the highest mortality rate of any mental illness because it is a mental illness. So how do you treat that? The very first thing that we do is nutrition, and food is medicine, literally. So we want to get the body re-nourished back to a more regular weight, if you will, to try to repair all the systems that have been damaged through the starvation process.
Have you ever seen that anorexia is like a pushback from the comfort food, where someone looks in the mirror and says, whoa, I have a problem with comfort food, so I better just cut this out entirely? Are they connected in any way?
they are. What we're seeing is that people can definitely push back and say, well, I have a problem, and then go to the opposite extreme. Mm. We definitely see that. And there is crossover between the eating behaviours. About 50% of our clients who start out restricting and with anorexia can then at some time morph into more of what we call bulimia or overeating or binging. Right. And really it's about the brain chemistry and the circuitry and what the body is doing over time in response to the starvation.
Melanie, when you see someone walking down the street and or sitting in the restaurant or shopping with you, can you sort of look at that person and know that there's a problem with the way they eat? I mean, how can you tell? Because you have a practiced eye at this thing.
Yeah, and the reality is it's actually very, very difficult to see physically. Mm. You can't make any assumptions. I mean, for our very, very, very ill anorexics, I mean, I think we've probably, unfortunately, seen people walking around who look like a skeleton. Yes. So that's a very extreme example of an anorexic. Most of our clients don't look like that. They actually look, you know, on the thinner side, but in this society, that could be regarded as very normal. So, you know, generally, by and large, there's no way to clearly identify if someone has an eating disorder by looking at them alone.
Okay, very good. We are talking with Melanie Rogers. She is the director of the Balance Eating Disorder Treatment Center in New York City. We're talking about eating disorders today. And I'm learning good stuff here. This is fantastic, and I hope, listener, you are as well. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, more questions on this very vital and can be very deadly topic. So stay right where you are.
I'm Dr. James Markham with your biblical prescription for life. A question came in. I worry a lot. It's now getting to the point where I cannot sleep or focus. What can I do? Well, let's look at Philippians 4, verse 6. Be careful or anxious for nothing, but in everything, using prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known unto God. Well, when we're anxious, it makes stress go up in our body, which damages everything. Well, in this text, the biblical prescription is God doesn't want us to do this. He wants us to use prayer and supplication, thanksgiving, basically worship, to treat anxiety. There's scientific literature by Andrew Newberg that says, yes, this will help us. So our biblical prescription for today is try not to be anxious about anything. Turn it over to God, prayer, and be thankful. For more information, go to our website. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Before we get back to our guest, I want to extend to you an open invitation to visit the HeartWise Ministries website. Why? Because I believe that's where you'll find many of the answers you seek as you strive to improve your physical, mental, and spiritual health. Begin with Dr. James Markham's blog, insights into the very latest developments within the ever-changing world of health and well-being. Then submit a question to the Ask the Doctor section. Your query will be answered by physicians who practice medicine every day. Need a little more information? Watch the Heart of Health Live television episodes or listen to these radio programs. Check out the HeartWise Healthy Eats link, where you'll find restaurants that offer healthy choices. And finally, don't forget to leave your prayer requests. The HeartWise staff will join you in placing your needs before God, the ultimate physician. All that and more are waiting for you at heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org. Stop by today. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today, Melanie Rogers. She is the director of the Balance Eating Disorder Treatment Center, located in New York City. New York City, Melanie, is this a hotbed of eating disorders? And if it is, why?
We definitely see a higher rate or percentage of eating disorders here in the city, I think in many of the larger cities. We think it's because of a combination of factors. One is enormous amounts of stress and enormous amounts of pressure industries here. A lot of people come to New York and other large cities to, you know, really try to succeed in their careers, and there's pressure. If you apply a lot of pressure and a lot of stress into your life and you have a predisposition towards developing an eating disorder, it's like a perfect storm.
Mm. I would assume then that you have a pretty intensive stress reduction program going there at the center?
Absolutely. Mm. A big part of treatment and recovery is how to manage and deal with stress in a way that you're not using food, weight loss, or overeating. In the same way that we might, you know, we might treat substance abusers or alcoholics, an alternative to using alcohol through alternative coping methods and stress reduction methods.
Is there a particular profile of the type of person who is more apt to have an eating disorder than the normal person? I mean, you look around and I would assume that a lot of people don't have eating disorders. What sets them apart? Their ability to deal with stress, how they react to stress, what sets them apart as not having an eating disorder from those who do?
Great question. And what we actually think it comes down to is a genetic predisposition. Mm. So what I mean by that, Charles, a good example, if we use alcohol, because I think that's a great example.
Right.
So
right.
Most people go to college and, you know, let's say 100 people in a class, they all drink.
Yes.
Not everyone is then going to go on and become an alcoholic, but those who have a genetic vulnerability may do so. And that genetic vulnerability could be a combination of not just the alcoholism, but difficulty handling stress, difficulty coping with difficult emotions, etc. And so, again, it's a perfect storm. We find the same with the eating disorder statistic. Let's say we have 100 girls usually, but, you know, now we have more guys doing the same. They go on a diet. Not all of them will develop an eating disorder because not all of them have a genetic predisposition to then have the eating disorder manifest. So that's a little bit about what makes some people more vulnerable than others.
Would it be helpful for us to look at photographs of our family in the past, our great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, uncles and aunts, to find that genetic string that might be attached to our toe?
Yes, very much. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely essential. And actually what we need to be looking at is not just if there was an eating disorder in the family, because that's often very difficult to know, but if there's anxiety and depression in the family, mm-hmm. these cluster together. So anxiety, depression, along with an eating disorder or obesity, and also a substance abuse history. If you see any of those elements in your family history, you know, it's worth kind of going in with a little bit of further investigation.
Mm. Our guest today, Melanie Rogers, she's the director of the Balance Eating Disorder Treatment Center located in New York City. Let me bring up a case here. I didn't ask how old you are, and I'm not going to, but there was a singer that I just loved very much growing up, and that was Karen Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she had real issues with eating. Do you know things now that Karen's people did not know when she went to see doctors and nutritionists and whatnot? Has there been any new developments that may have helped save Karen Carpenter?
Wow, that's an amazing question. I would like to think so. The difficulty, though, is at the end of the day, because this is a disease of the brain, ultimately the client in that disease or in that state of having this illness needs to also be consciously making decisions to recover.
Yes, yes.
Even
yes.
though the brain is functioning in a way that makes it very difficult to make those kind of cognitive, reasonable decisions. So the answer is we know a lot more since then, thank goodness. Unfortunately, her death really put a spotlight on this illness as a very, very real thing. Mm. But ultimately, it then comes down to the individual's ability to actually accept help, which makes it such a dangerous illness.
Now, look what you're doing here. You're putting the responsibility on us. You're saying that we need to be proactive in our own health. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah. Yes, we do. And as a society, I think we also can do a lot with not putting so much pressure on a perfect body image, which then leads, you know, young people to diet, which then could potentially trigger the illness in the first place.
Mm. In other words, if we make fun of someone who may be a little bit overweight, if we make jokes about that person and we talk behind his or her back, we could be setting them up for some real damage. Is that right?
That's very true.
Oh,
yeah, we're seeing a high correlation between bullying and kids who then go on to develop binge eating or even the other extreme, anorexia or bulimia.
Okay, there's going to be moms and dads listening to this program right now, and they have a teenage daughter. I'm assuming, does this happen to boys as well, this whole eating disorder thing?
It does actually, Charles. Unfortunately, the latest research is suggesting that as many as 25% of those people with an eating disorder are guys.
Really?
But
wow.
They're definitely not coming in for treatment, and mm-hmm. they're very rarely being identified because the assumption is that it's more of a female illness.
Right. Okay, so let's say that the mom and dad has a child, and it's probably a girl. Can they tell? Can they look at that child? Can they watch that child through the day? Can they sort of pick up some signs that there may be a problem here?
Absolutely. It comes down to being attuned with your child, with your daughter. Let's say if your daughter starts skipping breakfast or skipping lunch. Often we see a lot of girls these days, the school schedule is so packed they don't even have a lunch break,
right,
and it's kind
right.
of cruel to skip lunch. Or skipping dinner or saying, Mom, I'm not going to eat carbs, you know, I'm skipping the bread, I'm skipping the potatoes. If you see those kind of behaviors, it's, it's a caution flag for sure.
Does the way we eat today as Americans support or not support eating disorders?
I would say it actually supports
really?
Eating disorders.
Really?
Because if you look at the two extreme, Charles, we have an overabundance of large quantities of food. And so, you know, we therefore have this ability to manifest overeating or compulsive overeating by virtue of just supply and convenience.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other extreme, we have crazy, crazy diets. I mean, every week there's a new diet book out
true.
On the market. We have cleanses. We have all sorts of different products and services out there that are saying, you know, you should be losing weight. So we've got both extremes, and both, I think, can really contribute to people getting very confused, but also to ultimately becoming dysregulated in the sense of we forget to just rely on hunger and fullness, and the external cues are kind of driving what we ultimately consume, which can result in an eating disorder manifesting.
If you could stand beside a young lady who is standing looking in the bathroom mirror and she does not like what she sees, it doesn't look like the magazine covers, it doesn't look like her movie stars up on the screen, what would you tell her?
I would ask her what her friends would say. I would ask her what she would say to a friend if she were looking in the mirror. And she would probably then say, well, I'd look at my friend in the mirror and I'd say, you look great, you look gorgeous. It's very, very hard when you're looking in the mirror yourself and you've got all these images around you of perfection, or actually not even perfection because they're not real
right.
images. How can we possibly compare to those images? Very, very toxic for a young girl. Very confusing. So I think the whole positive body image is an incredibly important message for us to get out there to our girls and our young boys as well.
Mm. Melanie Rogers, our guest today. Melanie, where can people go to learn more about you and your Balanced Eating Disorder Treatment Center?
They can certainly go online to our website, balancedtx.com, and they can certainly give us a call, and we're very, very happy to answer any questions or be a resource to anyone in the community.
BalanceTX.com. Check that out, listener. There's a lot of good information there. And you can learn a little bit more about the work there at the Balance Eating Disorder Treatment Center located in New York City. And if you're listening to this program in New York City, what's your address?
Our address is 112 West 27th Street. We're between 6th and 7th Avenue.
All right. To those who don't live in New York, I have no idea what you just said, but for those who live in New York, they probably go, oh, yeah, I know where that is. Okay. All right. Very good. Well, Melanie Rogers, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate your words of guidance and information. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Charles.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Melanie Rogers inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.